This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
All right, bismillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in. Qala tabaraka wa ta'ala fi kitabihi al-kareem ba'ad an aqul a'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. آمن الرسول بما أنزل إليه من ربه والمؤمنون كل آمن بالله وملائكته وكتبه ورسله لا نفرق بين أحد من رسله وقالوا سمعنا وأطعنا غفرانك ربنا وإليك المصير لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها لها ما كسبت وعليها ما اكتسبت ربنا لا تؤاخذنا إن نسينا أو أخطأنا ربنا ولا تحمل علينا إصرا كما حملته على الذين من قبلنا ربنا ولا تحملنا ما لا طاقة لنا به واعف عنا واغفر لنا وارحمنا أنت مولانا فانصرنا على القوم الكافرين صدق الله العظيم رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي اللهم انفعنا بما علمتنا وعلمنا ما ينفعنا وزدنا علما اللهم ارنا حقيقة الاشياء كما هي اللهم ارنا الحق حقا وارزقنا اتباعه وارنا الباطل باطلا وارزقنا اجتنابه امين يا رب العالمين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We are on day 14. This is our 14th session in Ramadan Conversations. And this is right about the time we have neared the end of the Meccan period of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And the ayat we will be talking about today are the ayat that were revealed in the Meccan period, but not in Mecca per se, in the sense that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam received them in the Mi'raj. And these are the ayat that I attempted to recite just now. Very special ayat, the last two ayat, 280, ayat number 285 and 286 of Surah Al-Baqarah. A little bit of context, as always. We spoke about in our previous episode of the difficulties of the Amul Huzn and how Surah Yusuf is revealed in response to the grief of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Where he is emotionally, where he is socially, where he is with respect to his responsibility as a prophet of Allah, and generally carrying the mantle of prophethood of the Sahaba radiallahu ta'ala anhum, and where is all of that going? The burden that he feels, the difficulty that he is faced with, the difficulties, the challenges, all of that and how they are responded to in Surah Yusuf. Of course, we couldn't go over the entire surah, not practical to have done so, but it was an overview nevertheless. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's situation gets worse when, after Abu Talib has passed away and Abu Lahab assumes the responsibility of the leadership of Banu Hashim. And so we know for a fact that Abu Talib was extending protection to Rasulullah, that nobody in Quraysh could harm a hair on his head, so to speak, even though they did on a couple of occasions, but it was, that's all they could do. They wanted to do more. If it was up to them, they would have attempted to kill Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. But Abu Talib's protection, him being the leader of the tribe, the head of the tribe, came in the way. Now that he passes away, Abu Lahab is the senior most. And it is up in the air initially, is he going to continue the protection that Abu Talib extended to Muhammad Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam? Initially he does, but then it is very unreliable in the sense that he may withdraw it at any point. So Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam is looking for alternatives, naturally. There is an understanding that Mecca is not responding, that the best response that he could have gotten from Mecca, he has already gotten. There is nothing more here. He needs to change strategies. He needs to change where he's based, and the Sahaba would have to move with him. Already, a couple of migrations have taken place. We did not talk about them, but they were relevant at the point of particularly Surah Al-Ankabut was referring to that point, that the Sahaba did migrate to Abyssinia twice, in two contingents rather, to save themselves from the persecution of the Quraysh. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did not. But right around this time, he needs to know what are his alternatives, where can he go? Already recall that in the very first instance of the first revelation that he got, his conversation with Warqa bin Nawfal, he told him that your people are going to force you to leave Mecca. And Rasulullah ﷺ could not believe that at that point. But now it's becoming more and more believable, inevitable, that he has to leave, that he would have to leave. So he turns to Ta'if. When he turns to Ta'if, at that point, he, of course, extends the message foremost to the chiefs of the people of Ta'if. And in those interactions with the people, with the chiefs, the response that he gets is even worse than the response of the people of Quraysh or the leaders of Quraysh. So, for example, one of the chiefs he turns to him and he says, God didn't find anyone better than you. He had to choose you to be a prophet. Another one said, get away from me, because either you're telling the truth, which is not good for me, because I'm going to be disrespectful to you, or you're lying, and then it does not behoove me to speak to you. So get lost. Similar responses from the third chief, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam has to return pretty much empty-handed from Ta'if. They're not just going to let him go like that. And so as we know, what they did was that they turned the street urchins, the bad boys, who pelt the outcasts of society, who would bully, torture outcasts or madmen in the society, were pretty much given a social responsibility that he needs to be driven out. He needs to be pushed out. And so they pelt Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam with stones. And not just like small stones. Stones that literally would make you bleed. That were being thrown in order to hurt Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And he has, according to different narrations, either Zayd radiallahu ta'ala anhu or Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala anhu with him, and he's being stoned for carrying the message of Allah, and he is driven out of Ta'if. And they don't just leave it at that. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, his shoes filled with blood and he has to fall. His companion, whoever is with him, either Abu Bakr or Zayd, they're trying to protect him from any and all directions, but what can they possibly do? They're getting stoned as well. And so he falls to the ground. As he comes to, the words that issue from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's tongue at that point. And again, when we talk about conversations, when we talk about relating with Allah, it is important to identify this dimension of the relationship, which is one of complaining. And by this time, we can be pretty sure that Surah Yusuf has already been revealed. And so the same words being coded in the Quran coming from Ya'qub alayhi salam, when he says, إِنَّمَا أَشْكُوا بَثِّي وَحُزْنِي لَلَّهِ, that I complain of my grief, of my suffering to Allah, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says something similar. اللهم إليك أشكو ضعف قوتي. That Ya Allah, I complain to you about the weakness, about my utter weakness. I don't have strength. وَقِلَّةَ حِيلَتِي. And the scarcity of my resources, I don't have anything at my disposal. I'm literally at these people's mercy to do with me whatever they want to. إِلَى مَنْ تَكِلُونِ. To whom have you entrusted me? إِلَى بَعِيدٍ يَتَجَهَّمَنِي. So towards someone so distant from me, from you, they can do with me whatever they want to. To an enemy. And the dua goes on. Very beautiful dua, very important dua, very significant. He's not holding back. He's literally complaining. And then from that complaining, he transitions towards imploring Allah's greatness, Allah's mercy, Allah's light. And that's significant too, since that's how he feels, that there is utter darkness. And he's asking Allah that you are the light and I need you to dispel this darkness. It is when literally he's at his weakest that these words issue from his tongue. And it is at this point, when he's at his weakest, when he's in so much pain, that things start turning around. One of the first instances of this turnaround is when they're returning towards Mecca. They get, they stop at something of a settlement, of a house or outside, in the outskirts of Mecca, in which Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam meets non-Meccan people. So there's these people who help Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, give him some food or water. They're not from Mecca. They're from outside. They're servants or at the house of the person, whoever that person is. And they hear the message. They respond positively to that message. They're not Meccans. They're not mushrikeen. They're from another place, from another town. I'm forgetting exactly either. They were from Persia or they were Christians. I think they were Christians. In any case, they're non-Meccans, non-relatives. Rasulullah ﷺ has been rejected by relatives for the most part. The closest tribe affiliated with Quraysh were the Ta'if. He's been rejected from them as well. And now others are responding. Alien others, distant people, foreigners, not from the same locality, not from the same tradition. They're responding positively. Rasulullah ﷺ has that experience. They accept. Right around that time is the time where he has the Surah Jinn experience as well, as it is narrated there. Again, very alien others responding positively. قُلْ أُوحِيَ إِلَيَّ أَنَّهُ اسْتَمَعَ نَفَرٌ مِّنَ الْجِنِّ فَقَالُوا إِنَّا سَمِعْنَا قُرْآنًا عَجَبًا. Right, so Rasulullah ﷺ is told that, Ya Rasulullah, tell them that it has been revealed to me that a group of jinn heard the Qur'an and they returned to their own people and said, we have heard something fascinating, something incredible. And the whole surah goes on. So he gets that as a response. And the third response he gets, which is not just the pinnacle of all responses, it is the greatest experience of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's life, of any human's life. And it is an achievement for humanity. What is, of course, an individual achievement for Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is the journey of Isra and Mi'raj. That Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is invited by Allah first to a journey from Mecca to Jerusalem, where in the Bayt al-Maqdis, he has this experience of leading the Anbiya in prayer. So his maqam is established in that community of prophets, that he is their imam, the culmination, the last of them, in a sense, junior most, and being accorded a position of leadership among them. And from that experience to the experience of Mi'raj. And all of what happened in Mi'raj happened in Mi'raj. We know of narrations that talk about his first heaven, second heaven, third heaven, fourth heaven. And it's very difficult to conceive of. It is very difficult to conceive of because it was, again, an unprecedented experience, something that we cannot really relate with as to what's going on. Most of the descriptions that the Quran gives is they're very intentionally vague, because what is it that we can relate with in that experience? What we do know is that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, on the seventh heaven, when he goes to where even Jibreel cannot go to, he ascends to a point where even Jibreel cannot ascend to, where no prophet, no angel, no one has ever gone before. Where, as the Quran describes it, مَا زَاغَ الْبَصَرُ وَمَا طَغَى. This is Surah Najm. That his basar, his gaze, did not swerve. Now, remember, Musa alayhi salam asked to see Allah. رَبِّ أَرِنِي أَنْظُرْ إِلَيْكَ. My Lord, my Rabb, permit me, I want to see you. قَالَ لَن تَرَانِي. Allah said, no, you cannot. Musa alayhi salam insisted, but I want to. And so he was shown, and his gaze, his sight, could not withhold, could not withstand, just at the jelly, a reflection, if you will, of that possibility. The mountain was, it blew up, so to speak. Musa alayhi salam fell down, could not sustain it. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, after his entire lifetime of experiences, particularly since the first revelation, and how he's responded to all of those difficulties and challenges, none of those easy. He's gotten to that level, he's developed to that level, he has grown to that level that his sight, his gaze, is able to withhold. It doesn't swerve from whatever it is that he's shown, whatever he sees. The greatest of ayat of Allah, that meeting with Allah himself. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam's vision can withhold that, however it can. مَا زَاغَ الْبَصَرُ وَمَا طَغَى. Neither did he transgress. Because the second likelihood in such religious experiences is to transgress, to forget your place. One, to have that baqa, that strength, that standing, to stand your ground in the face of Allah himself. And the second imbalance is to forget yourself and consider yourself beyond your limits. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was able to hold that balance. And so he was able to withstand Mi'raj as one of the most incredible experiences that a human being can possibly have. His sight does not transgress. مَزَاغ الْبَصَرُ وَمَا طَغَى. Of the few things that we know from that experience, from the experience in the seventh heaven, Rasulullah ﷺ says that he heard the pen writing. And that is significant for humanity to know that the pen is still writing. And that tells us that the writing of destiny is a continuous process. And the only reason it would be a continuous process and not a process which is just done and dusted, forever closed and inaccessible to human beings. The reason why that's important is it would have been done and dusted if Allah was the sole author, the only author. Yes, there is, of course, an incredible part of history and destiny that Allah wrote and that nobody has any share in. And that part of the ink has dried up, for sure. But that's not the entirety of the story of humanity. Because if it was, then the pen would not be continuing to write. The reason why it is continuing to write, especially heard by Rasulullah ﷺ in the Mi'raj, is because human beings are co-authors in this history. Human beings are writing this story of the universe. And Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's Mi'raj signifies this importance of human contribution, human work, human authorship in the writing of destiny, which is also symbolized by the prayers that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is receiving, and then he is negotiating with Allah. Hearing from Musa alayhi salam, get it to reduce, that Allah himself is giving this room for negotiation. Again, 50 prayers end up to 5 prayers. It sounds kind of weird if you don't consider the significance of the human choice, human will being entertained by God himself. That this khudi was that buland, this khudi of Rasulullah ﷺ, his self was that high. It had that maqam. Ki khuda bande se khud puche, bata teri raza kya hai? What is it that you want? God is giving this permission. He's accommodating. He's inviting. And what the human being wants is being entertained, is being accommodated. That's huge. And the third thing that he receives from that seventh heaven are these two ayat. Foremost in these ayat, what the ayat begin with. Please understand that we take iman for granted. We have a very superficial understanding of what it means to believe. And in that, I say I believe, which means I believe. We have, from the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Sahaba radiallahu ta'ala anhum, adequate evidence to know that that's not how they perceived iman and belief. They weren't sure. Do I really believe? They weren't that certain in their faith. They had certainty of faith, but they did not. They weren't certain of their own faith. What is to be believed in, they believed in. But do I really believe in it? That part was always suspect for them, which is why they always feared hypocrisy upon themselves so much. And so in this particular instance, for them, for Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam to be told by Allah, Amanar Rasul, the Prophet believed. That tells you so much. One, he had to undergo that process of belief. And we see from the first revelation itself, he didn't immediately believe. He was doubtful. How can I be prophet? How can this... There's other alternative explanations to what the experience I just had. I need to figure out all of them. And Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, Warqa bin Nawfal, subsequent revelations, all of those things played a part where he did go ahead to believe. And then he lived that belief over the course of the next 10 years. To the nth degree, as beautifully, with as much ihsan as a human being can possibly manage. To the point that within this world, within this life, Rasulullah ﷺ gets the certificate. Yes, you have belief. For all the rest of us, all the rest of us. That certificate does not come until the day of judgment. We cannot know, do we really believe? But for Rasulullah's Mi'raj, he's given that certificate prior to the day of judgment. He doesn't have to die to find out if he really was a believer. Why? Because the degree to which he is shaken up by the Amul Huzn, by the year of grief, by the experiences in Ta'if, he's given all sorts of reassurances. Surah Yusuf was a reassurance. So many other revelations around that time was a reassurance. The belief of the people that he met on his way back from Ta'if, that's a reassurance. The experience with the jinn, that's a reassurance. So much, but no. There's this reassurance. Allah invites Rasulullah all the way to the seventh heaven to meet him in person, gives him this reassurance. You've believed. And it's stated in third person, Aman al-Rasul, the Prophet has believed. So it's like an announcement to the world. It's like a ceremony. It's like the way you would announce an award. The person standing right there, but you would refer to them in third person so that the audience can hear that this is certified. That this belief is certified. Aman al-Rasul. The Prophet believed. More than anything else we've seen before, he would be suspicious of his own. Am I doing something wrong? And Allah's telling him, Ma anta bimalum, you're not blameworthy, you're not to blame. But now he does something more special, most special. Aman al-Rasul. Bima unzila ilayhi min rabbihi. In whatever has been revealed to him from his Rabb. The Prophet believed. Wal-mu'minun. He doesn't just get this certificate from himself, for himself. He gets it for the believers. Back in Mecca, all of whom, Khabbab, Bilal, the pain that they've all been through, he brings the certificate for them as well. You've believed. Which is why they're sabiqoon al-awwaloon. They're the maqam of the muhajirun. It's inimitable. Nobody comes close. Nobody comes close. Wal-mu'minun. He brings it for them too. They've really believed. Kullun amana billah. Every one of them really believed in Allah. وَمَلَائِكَتِهِ وَكُتُبِهِ His angels and his books, وَرُسُلِهِ And his messengers. They've lived what it means to believe in angels, books, and messengers. Their life is testimony to that. Their choices are testimony to that. Their patience is testimony to that. That these are people who believe in values that come from up high. That Allah sends through angels, in books, that messengers truthfully attest to. They live by those values. لَا نُفَرِّقُ بَيْنَ أَحَدٍ مِنْ رُسُلِي And they say, we don't distinguish any of his messengers. Lesser prophet, not enough of a prophet. That one's not real prophet. No, they understand that the prophets are a community. And their message is a holistic message. And they are the community as a whole. You cannot take any part away from the community. It doesn't remain a community after that. the organic wholeness of the community of prophethood, how they reinforce each other. Their responsibilities may be different. Their time periods may be different. There's so much about them that may be different. But they all formulate one family of prophets. وَقَالُوا And they say, سَمِعْنَا وَأَطَعْنَا We have heard and we obey. We have heard and we obey. They testify to this experience. غُفْرَانَكَ رَبَّنَا Your forgiveness, our Rabb. We hear, we obey, but we're not always perfect. We can't really obey the way the right is to be obeyed. We have shortcomings. Your forgiveness, our Rabb, وَإِلَيْكَ الْمَصِيرُ And towards you is our ultimate destination. And this recognition of returning to Allah is a mixture of fear and hope. A fear of returning to Allah, have I done enough? A hope of returning to Allah, it's Allah that I'm returning to. لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها. No one is burdened beyond his capacity. No human being is burdened beyond his capacity. It is a reassurance to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam at this point that you've been through a lot, but it's because you could go through a lot. You had the capacity to do so. This ayah is a testimony. It is a reassurance, especially when we feel we can't take it. The degree of our suffering is testimony to the degree of our capacity, of our strength. لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها. Allah does not burden anyone beyond their capacity. لها ما كسبت. For it is what it has earned. The judgment is going to be in accordance with that capacity. No one's going to be asked to pay on the day of judgment. Just like Amar bin Yasir said words of kufr in the face of the torture, he could not do otherwise. Allah is not going to hold him accountable for that. Rasulullah ﷺ told him so. You're not going to be held accountable for it. لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ So for it is whatever good it earns, وَعَلَيْهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ And against it, what is what it wrought of you do good, it's for you. You do evil, it's for you. Your freedom is being testified to. Your responsibility is being affirmed. رَبَّنَا لَا تُؤَخِذْنَا And so the believers, they implore Allah, Our Rabb, don't take us to task. إِن نَسِينَا أَوْ أَخْطَانَا It is beautiful. It is being revealed in the form of a dua, which means the possibility of its acceptance is definitely there. Allah is giving us this dua to make. What does that say? It's an acceptance. إِن نَسِينَا أَوْ Ask it, earn it, get there. Our Rabb, do not take us to task. إِن نَسِينَا أَوْ أَخْطَانَا If we forget or we make a mistake. Allah reassuring human beings, I know you forget, I know you make mistakes. رَبَّنَا وَلَا تَحْمِلْ عَلَيْنَا إِصْرًا Our Rabb, do not make us bear a burden كَمَا حَمَلْتَهُ عَلَى الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِنَا Like that which you laid upon those before us. The sacrifice of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and the Sahaba in Mecca is being accepted and a dua, in the form of a dua, it is being announced that because of your sacrifice, those who come after you will suffer less. We owe it to that sacrifice. They sacrificed for us. The dua is telling us this, that we ask Allah, Ya Allah, do not place a burden upon us because of the way you burdened those before us. We don't have that capacity. We have to go through what Bilal went through. We go through what Khabbab bin al-Arth went through, radiallahu ta'ala anhum, Yasir and Sumayya. We're not going to make it. We'll snap. And so the dua asking us to remember that sacrifice that an entire community of believers made. For us. So that we don't have to suffer. And we suffer less on that account. رَبَّنَا وَلَا تُحَمِّلْنَا مَا لَا طَاقَةَ لَنَا بِنَا Our Rabb, burden us not with that which we have no ability to bear. وَعْفُ أَنَّا Let us, give us relaxation. وَاغْفِرْ لَنَا, forgive us, وَارْحَمْنَا, and have mercy on us. This is a very real relationship, real-time relationship. Make mistakes, seek forgiveness, go back at it, fallible, make mistakes again, get back to it. Talk, communicate with Allah. أَنْتَ مَوْلَانَا, you are our guardian and protector. فَانْصُرْنَا عَلَى الْقَوْمِ الْكَافِرِينَ, so help us against a disbelieving people. Again, this dua is relevant. It makes sense because the Sahaba and the Prophet ﷺ, they're taking a stand in the face of which they're opposed. They're being oppressed. If there is no such stand, if there is no such commitment that creates ripples and opposition, it becomes very difficult to relate with. It becomes very difficult to relate with. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.